other yak babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, a new podcast on the internet sponsored by Wiener Octopi, when one just isn't enough. I'm here with my personal pals, Dave.
Hey, boys.
Brick.
Hey, boys.
And we got Old Irish Nico as well.
Hey, boys.
Now, Old Irish Nico, this is an Old Irish topic that you have been talking about for a while. Why don't you break it down for us? We're talking, it's not just symbolism, but it's something akin to that, right?
Yeah, kind of. So, this came up a couple weeks ago. My wife and I were reading this book called Nothing to See Here. And it's like a literary novel about a woman who goes to nanny for her friend. And her friend has these two stepkids who occasionally bursts into flames, and that's kind of the, you know, the elevator pitch of the book is that, you know, it's kind of, it's one of those literary novels that's a little magical realist. Like, there was a kind of a fad in the past, like maybe around 2010, a couple years around there, where like a ton of literary books had those kinds of magical realist kind of sales points or whatever, where it would be like a completely normal book, except when someone gets cut in this world, light comes out of their body instead of blood, or, you know, stuff like that. And I think it's probably easiest just to describe them as magical realists, because that seems to get at that kind of style, you know, where there's like the world is mostly normal except for one weird thing. And so my wife and I read this book, and we got to the end, and I just mentioned to her casually that I liked it except for the heavy-handed metaphor of raising kids, like, and how they have meltdowns and bursts into flames. And she was like, oh, I don't read those for the metaphors at all. I just read them, like, literally. So I guess I'm wondering how you guys, if you guys read those books, if you look for metaphors in books that like that, that don't necessarily like completely conform to the laws of reality, and how you deal with books that seem to be hitting you over the head with metaphors like that. At least to me, I don't know. Have you guys read many of those literary magical realist books?
I was thinking about this, and I came up with the example from the class, one of the classes we took together in grad school. I think it was with Ben Brooks. We read short stories by, I couldn't find the name of the author. I was like trying to, I had like such little to go on to try to figure this puzzle out. But it was like all, the book was all kind of stories like that. There was one about the sky collapsing. Remember that one?
Right. Where the sky just gets lower and lower.
Yeah. Then,
yeah.
I do. Kind of like almost like modern day fables, right? They kind of like, just like something's happening. I thought about that and how I did enjoy that collection, but also it came with this like dose of sweetness.
Kevin Brockmeyer.
Yeah, there you go. That's right.
Yeah.
It came with this like sort of like saccharine quality that I still couldn't totally reconcile with enjoying. Right? It was like, I like these ideas. They're fun. But also I'm just like, there's nothing much here besides the idea, which seems to be the problem with these kinds of high concept things.
Right.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm struggling to come up with examples. It's one of those, for me, it's one of those things that like when it works, I like it. When it doesn't work, I really don't like it.
Right.
It seems like if the point is the metaphor, at least to me, then I don't like it.
Yeah.
And that's true with things without kind of supernatural elements. It's the same with just a straight literary fiction. Like if a book manages to get at some pretty deep things, and that's probably very much the author's intention of writing that book, was to get at those things. If it handles it in such a way that it's not the like tip of the pyramid that the whole book works towards, like I tend to kind of get let down when that happens. Instead, I kind of want it worked in much more elegantly or naturally or whatever. And I think this
not notable.
Yeah, I don't want them to attach bells to it, you know. And when they do that, it turns me off, and it kind of cheapens the experience, I think. Right. And part of that is you know, books that make you feel smart, you tend to like more, right? So if you feel like you're uncovering this thing within the book, then, you know, it's great. if you're like, oh, this book about cockroaches is also about Brexit, I'm a genius because it's written all over it, then like you're not, right? And it's just, and then it, and the author just hits you over the head with it. And I think just like everything else, it comes down to how strong an author they are, right? Because when it's just like, hey, here's a book that clearly wasn't going to sell, so I switched it so light comes out of her eyes. It's like, well, you know, that's not...
Yeah.
You know, like zombies were interesting until they weren't interesting anymore, right? Because then that thing got so played out. And it's the same, it's that same pattern, right? Like, oh, it's not really about zombies. It's about modern consumerism. Yeah, maybe in 1972, but now it's something else. And you can't just keep going back to that.
Or vampires, like how they say Twilight is about like men ravaging women in different ways.
Yeah, just either way, let the one thing I say to clients a lot is let the reader do the work. Like, you do the work that allows the reader to do the work, him or herself. And readers get so much more out of that if they can, I guess, connect the dots that you've laid out for them rather than you making the dots and then making the lines as well.
I think we sort of walked into this anyway, but I think this is much more effective, and it's true in magical realism as well. I think this is much more effective as a short story technique or a short novel technique than an extended metaphor, because when that gets extended, it gets tired. And a short story, if you have a collection of 15 of these and only 10 of them land, you're still all right, right? And some will land for some people and not others, too. I'm sure that's part of it, right? Because part of the difficulty of working with a pointed metaphor like that is if it doesn't speak to the reader, it doesn't matter if the rest of your book's good.
Well, right? Yeah.
I guess, well, maybe that's not true because, like, if people, like you said, like Kathleen didn't read it that way and she could just put that aside, then maybe not.
If the metaphor is trying to pave over sloppy writing or uninteresting writing, that's a problem, right? If it's my story about raising children is very dull, so I've instead added this concept of them burning into flames, whatever, when they have a fit, to make it seem appealing. That sucks. But if the metaphor is giving the writer something to work with that is enhancing what's already interesting on top of that, that's good, right? You want that to be like value added. And I think often it's, I don't know, maybe not often, but like it seems harder to pull that off than to slap on an extra layer of complication just to have it, right?
Yeah. So in this particular one with the kids bursting into flames, it is, I thought, a really good book. It's funny. It's well written. The characters are characters. They're not just stand-ins for, you know, situations, kind of, that I think sometimes that can happen. But at the same time, the metaphor is just so in your face to me that I have a hard time putting it aside completely. And I think some other examples, just to give a little food for thought. So there was a book a few years ago by Amy Bender called The Particular Sadness of Lemon Cake, where a girl can taste the feelings of the people who make pastries in their creations. And then there's like Life of Pi, where there's like a tiger in the rescue boat with the guy, and there's like the metamorphosis, like we kind of alluded to. I think it is interesting too that like even if you don't like, I don't particularly like, I think it is a little bit cheap to just throw one of those things in there, especially when it was a super big fad. Like, there's actually two books about people who can taste feelings through cake. So when it gets kind of played out like that, I really get turned off. But at the same time, it is memorable. Like, I still remember that story that you were saying, like where the sky comes down and like touches the ground. And that, I guess that could be part of the kind of seduction of writers like wanting to do that, is because like that's for one thing, it's something to talk about for your characters to talk about, you know?
Right.
And a way for your characters to deal with something that would otherwise be much harder to write your way into.
Yeah.
For another thing, it's way more memorable.
I wonder if part of it is maybe wanting a sort of a metaphor or a whatever we want to call it, a thing to work with that is not necessarily lining up one-to-one with some sort of concept, right? Like if it's there to be a complication for the plot, to be the story interesting and engaging and to work with it, that's great. But need not be, like you were just saying, you don't want it to be so easy to figure out that you're like, oh, this is the thing and that's it. Like,
right,
the story where the ceiling was, or the sky was kind of falling, getting closer, I don't recall it being an obvious metaphor for anything. It was just this like quirky right. sort of thing that was happening that made the plot sort of a bit more interesting or sort of more engaged maybe. So that could be a difference too. If it's not trying to be a replacement
right.
analogy, it's just other stuff to make the, sort of the world more complicated.
Yeah, I think it is. It's a tough line to walk with that kind of thing, though, because like even when you can like take that metaphor a couple of different ways, it's still like the sky is falling, like literally.
Right.
So it's the metaphor, I think, is it's like you can apply different meanings to it, I think. But right. I guess there's that sense that when it feels metaphorical, you know, it feels like. You know, when it doesn't really make sense or it's not maybe realistic, then I guess I am and Kathleen isn't, but I am instinctively like looking for what the metaphor is because
right.
it's like a dream logic, you know, like if it doesn't make sense, then you're looking for what it means instead.
Yeah. That's also like, that's part of the way you're trained to read in school too, right? Like it's to like unpack things and seek like the meaning to decipher a text, whereas that's not always the intention behind the text in the first place, right? But it sounds like this was a case where the book was really good on its own. It didn't need this extra work to make it more interesting.
But I mean, maybe it did, because like the whole book is about those kids bursting into flames, and like it doesn't really happen, but like if they don't burst into flames, it's like it's a completely different book,
right? You know? Right.
So it's tough. Yeah,
you know who does this well that I really like is Italo Calvino. I feel like Calvino's story is not quite the same concept, but close to it, where there's like something weird going on that does and doesn't impact the emotional way of the story is really, I think they're really interesting. They don't always work 100%, but I think that he does that or did that particularly effectively.
Mm-hmm.
I think we also read them in that class, so that makes sense.
Yeah, Cosmic Comics is a great book. It's a little different though, I think.
Yeah, it's not quite the same thing. It's because those concepts usually are a bit more elaborate.
When you get into like fabulism and stuff, it feels different to me than sort of the insertion of the weird in order to gussy up something that's otherwise pretty banal.
Yeah, I'm thinking of that story where they can get to the moon, like when the moon passes close to the surface of the earth, they can like jump there.
Oh, yeah.
And he's in love with the woman, and then she like he tries to get stranded on the moon with her, and she like throws him out or whatever.
Right.
I think of that as kind of a version of that, where getting to the moon part is this wacky thing on top of a sort of story about being young and in love with someone who is totally inappropriate for you.
There is something different, I feel like, about like writers like Italo Calvino, maybe like Thomas Pynchon kind of comes to mind for whatever reason, like where weird shit happens, but it's like there's so much weird shit happening that it's like that's just the world that they make, as opposed to like these like magical realists writers, it can sometimes feel tacked on because the world is completely naturalistic except for one thing, and that one thing
sometimes it really feels like they wrote a book and the editor's like, well,
yeah,
what's the hook?
Hmm.
You know, and they go back, all right, let's go replace alcoholism with being a werewolf, right? Or zombies.
Let's replace alcoholism with being a werewolf. Write that down for Yak Baby's episode of the future.
I already have a few hundred pages of it.
Well, listeners, let us know your thoughts on these extended metaphors, symbols, kind of magical realism work. What do you think of it? Is it working for you? Do you find it irritating? Do you use it in your own writing? If so, why? Let us hear. Twitter is where you can find us. Yak Babies at Twitter. And email us at yakbabiespodcast@gmail.com. You can also write us a review on Apple Podcast or whatever that platform is now. Give us 5 stars. Let us know why. That'd be wonderful. And if you are not done supporting Yak Babies that way, then you can go to patreon.com/yakbabies and for $1 a month get access to our secret bonus podcast. It's more like the trimmings from this podcast. So there's like there's just extra bits you'll get to hear that make it their way onto the recording, and we put them there because they're really funny and worth sharing. But you must have prior interest to want to listen to them, let's say. So for $1, get the access to all those. Lots of fun stuff going on there. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all their loyal listeners and especially their patrons past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, and William Howard Taft.